Look at the size difference.
Welcome back, creeps.
Hey.
It's been a while.
Hey. You remember us.
Yeah, remember us. The weekly show. Every Friday.
We're your friends that you haven't seen in a while. But when we do get together, we pick up where we left off. You know the friends. We are those friends.
We actually, even in real life, we are those friends.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to another episode of Weekly Creep. Obviously, we didn't mean to be gone for so long. January and February, they were a couple of chaotic months, basically.
Yeah.
Stuff that we couldn't have planned for just kind of kicked us in the nuts. So really threw us. We had to go. Well, I went back to Ireland, as most of you know, like at the end of December. And then we had to go back at the beginning of February. So it was a lot of rushing around doing stuff, and then we came back, and then we got sick, or well, I got sick, and
you did get sick.
Barrel of laughs. So it's literally just been.
Oh, and that's when I had all those stomach issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have an endoscopy, scheduled for April. I'm gonna have a camera stuck down my throat to see why I was having severe stomach pains. They're gone. Right now I don't have them, but I have to keep a watchful eye of any weirdness going on in my stomach and then just cease all, risky activity, as it were,
like,
you know, like
bread.
Eating cheeses and stuff like that. But yeah, it's severe. I thought I was going to die. I thought maybe something had exploded inside of me, but it was really bad.
But you're good now.
So far.
We're both good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so on the end of the last episode, I said, see you guys in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. because I thought 2 weeks was going to be enough time, and then everything happened. So anyway, we're back today. We're going to get spooky-ooky.
Yeah, we're going to get right into it. We don't want to bore you with the details. We're going to get started like we usually do with the card of the day.
And then I have a couple of shout-outs.
Oh yeah, and then the things we've been enjoying. Well, crap, I guess we do have to bore you with the details. All right, so today's card is the Four of Wands. Today's message: today is a day for gratitude and celebration. You are beginning to see the fruits of your labors. Enjoy them. Remember, you didn't get to where you are all alone. So show your appreciation for those that have supported you. Celebrating your success and all that you're grateful for strengthens your foundation to support further growth.
Very nice.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I just got a filling from the dentist. So if you see me going like making weird things with my mouth, it's because my tooth just feels a little bit different. Not that I would go anywhere else for a filling. Last week I was up to my nuts in True Detective. Like I was watching it in work, on the toilet in work. Soon as I got home, I started watching the first season when I was on a plane a good while back. And then we got HBO Max, so I could watch it. But then we ended up watching The Sopranos for a few weeks, which we still never finished.
No.
So I finished True Detective season one, watched it from the beginning again. Matthew McConaughey is my favorite in that. Then I started watching Season Detective 2 with Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn. And at the start, I was like, I'm not really that into this. Like, I was talking to you about the first season because it's like, set in Louisiana. It's got like, basically if we were to drive around now, like on a long road trip, it looks like the places that we would be driving through. And the soundtrack was like very much like Texas feels to me, like, or Texas, Louisiana. So I was like, oh, okay, that's why I liked that so much. And then I was trying to get into the second season. I just couldn't. And then someone else said season 2 is the worst.
Mm.
But by the end of it, I had drank my morning coffee and like my heart rate was up.
Yeah.
Watching this last episode. I could not get over it. And when it finished, I was like, oh my God.
Hmm.
Now, I think I do have a soft spot for Colin Farrell. I met him when I was a kid and he was lovely. And my mom has a thing for him and all, like, you know what I mean? But it was so good. I think I might have preferred season 2 to season 1. And then season 3 was kind of a letdown for me. It was fine. But after being so
engrossed.
Yeah. In season 2, it was just like, oh, this is okay.
Yeah.
And then season four, I still have not watched. And I'm kind of holding out. I want us to watch it together.
Is that the Jodie Foster one?
Yeah. And everybody is talking about it right now.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if I'll have time, honestly.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So anybody who is watching that, because I'm aware that it's like being released weekly. Do not ruin anything for me. I am going to watch it eventually. But yeah, what have you been doing, loudly?
I've been trying to barrel through my Kirby game, and I'm on the last world, and I'm not too inclined to finish because this last world I'm not crazy about, because it's like lava, fire, steel, and like visually to me it's not appealing, so I'm just not like that into finishing. It's a lovely game. If you know what, to be honest, I probably won't finish it. I've already started Yoshi's Crafting World. It's adorable. But because I'm currently reading a buttload of books, because I've been taking full advantage of our local public library, and I've been like nonstop reading. Like I've been getting my recommendations through Reddit, and you know, I know it sounds silly because there's like so many books in the world, but I was kind of feeling like disheartened because I had finished Leanne's Moriarty's last book. And I was like, well, crap, I'm never going to find a good book ever again in my life. But thankfully, I was being very naive, and I found several books that have kept my attention and authors that I plan on reading more from. And I have found a dud. I came across a dud. Like, thinking about, the more I think about this book, the more it irritates me. Because it was just, in my opinion, so poorly executed.
Jesus, all right.
Like, it was, and when I described it to my niece, because she can be an avid reader if she finds something that she really, that really piques her interest. I explained it to her, like, in just very, like, in one sentence. Like, this is what her writing is like. And she was like, ew, burn it. But it just, it infuriated me. The contact, the dynamics, like, the back and forth, like, it just didn't.
Nothing was vibing.
Like, none of the characters, I couldn't empathize with them. Like, I didn't like any of them.
The Ice Cream Man.
It's the Ice Cream Man.
Haven't recorded in 2 months.
You know him by now. They know him, Adam. It's fine.
2 months we haven't recorded in, and he shows up fucking now.
And you know what? That's probably what our listeners are thinking about with us. They're like, oh, 2 months and now you're fucking back.
Okay, with the Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, so let's give the Ice Cream Man some grace. But anyways. But I did not like the book, basically. But, let's shift our focus to more positive things. I'm also painting again, which I'm very excited about. I'm an amateur painter, but I painted something in the park. And it was more like ASMR-ish because it was like a very noisy park. And my goal is to keep these videos like 30 minutes long. Because anything more than that, I think I might be overkill. It's just basically something that you can pop in the background and while you're cleaning or something, you could do that. But for me, it's very therapeutic. Like it I can do ASMR for people who want to watch, and two, like I get fulfillment of just doing something with my hands, being creative with my hands.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I've been writing book reviews, which I'll film in the future. I know. I don't watch any book channels. I do watch this makeup channel who sometimes, who has been doing some book related content, which, and when she talks about other book channels, it makes me think like, oh, cool. Like, you know, like it just like makes me be like, why the fuck aren't I talking about the books that I enjoy more often? Because I feel like people should know about these books. You know, so why not?
Yeah, I feel like having a positive voice in the book community, because that's one bitchy community.
Is it now?
Yeah, really and truly is. Anyway, but I love that. I love that for you. Oh, that's what you say. Now, the videos, though, are really nice because I like putting stuff like that on when I'm reading. Mm. I mean, and it's just like generic background noise. Like, oh, you hear
your ducks,
the birds, whatever. Yeah, you know, in the background.
Your kids playing in the background. You hear the wind.
I actually interviewed someone just yesterday for this top secret project that's hopefully going to be coming out sometime in September or October of this year. And it was outdoors, so I knew it was going to be a challenge. And then it pissed rain. Mm. And then there was trains and there was cops, like sirens and everything. But I was just like, let's just go with it, man. It's going to bring the audience into the story, you know?
I mean, that's what I'm trying to get you to do with the ice cream man.
Fuck that ice cream man. Coming for you. All right. But there's a couple of like very important shout outs that we need to do here.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So first of all, a big, huge, enormous thank you to Nadia over at faunakids.ie. Nadia absolutely hooked me up with a custom, one-of-a-kind, or at least it was at the time, sweater for Dulce. It's right here. I ordered it kind of last minute at Christmas. It wasn't supposed to be a Christmas gift, but we're only getting to talk about it now. You wore it when we were back home because I was like, showing my grandmothers, I was like, you know, this lady made this for it. Like, it was really cool.
This is the inside.
It looks so mad soft, cozy. But Nadia has been like a huge Weekly Creep supporter for like as long as I can remember. And she owns a small, or she is a small independent business, but she's a small independent business making hand-printed organic clothing. She draws all those designs, those cats, like she designs that and then makes some sort of plate. I don't understand it. It's basically witchcraft. And then she like makes it on the jumper. But yeah, she gave us the VIP treatment. I'm not going to lie.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the day I messaged her, like with her size and whatever it was that I wanted, she was like, I'm going to go and make that right now. As in, she got off of her couch or wherever she was sitting.
Yeah.
Went to her workshop or wherever, made it, let it dry, and then drove it to the post office the next day, literally just in time for the Christmas close-off. And it got here like 2 or 3 days later.
Yeah, it got here super
fast. I was like,
holy
shit. Like,
yeah.
So, Nadia, first of all, thank you. And everybody go and check out her shop. Her stuff is extremely high quality, reasonably priced, and she supports charities and nice things like that. And again, small, independent, Irish business. Her website is faunakids.ie, faunakids.ie. Because she originally only did baby clothes and stuff, but now she's like expanded to normal human wear. And like I said, like some of the stuff is really cool, honestly. So again, faunakids.ie, I'll have that linked below. And then another mega shout out has to go to the fabulous Savannah, Vanna Magic on Instagram. Another longtime listener who sent us one of the nicest care packages ever. I'll like hide my face so the camera can focus. Not doing it, still picking up my face.
Is it focusing?
Yeah. I have to cover my own face. How freaking cute is that? Cute is not the word. When I've read enough books, I'll find a better word.
Now we're out of focus. Come on. There we go. Back in focus. Savannah is another longtime listener who sent us this nice package. But the whole package was chock full of personal gifts, including some of her own art, her custom potions, which are actually just gorgeous perfumes that she makes. I think it's her and her friend, I believe.
But look at the bottom, though, because this is glass, right? Glass with, like, metal and stuff. But, like, the detail, that small detail of putting felt, like a velvet, or is this felt? It has to be, like, felt or something.
Yeah.
But, like, so that doesn't cling on your surfaces. Like, it'll just, you can just easily place it there. It's not going to slide around. Like, it's these well-thought-out details, you know?
Yeah, no, and it smells great. It looks fantastic. There's also the
prints.
Yeah, prints are up behind us actually, so I don't want to take them down. And then this is like solid perfume. Mm-hmm. We kept it all here because we wanted to be able to show it. It smells delicious. I'm very bad at describing things, but it's fantastic. Follow me on delicious. He's making these, I think, with a friend or like business partner, and they're selling them on Etsy at the minute. Again, I'm going to link Savannah's Instagram down below. Click on there because I think that's still the best place to reach her, and then she'll have her own links there. And yeah, it was just really nice. Like, we came home after, honestly, it was a shitty week.
Yeah.
We made the best of it. Like, you know what I mean? Still being home with family and all. And then we came home to this lovely gift, and it just, it made a big difference, honestly.
It lifted our spirits.
Yeah, 100%. And then I'm recommending a YouTube channel called STLNDRMS. He's a DJ who just does lovely work using actual vinyl. So you hear the lovely, warm, crackly sounds. And his setup is just very visually pleasing. Mm. My friend shared one of his videos with me right as I was finishing writing this episode. So that's the soundtrack to the last half of the episode for me. Mm. It was like the perfect text at the perfect time. And then, yeah, I think that's all the shout outs. I think we're all caught up.
Yeah, that only took 30 minutes.
Right, I suppose you better tell a story.
Yeah, that's why they're here.
That's why we're all here. Oh, also another friend of mine. I've got loads of friends. I have so many friends. Oh my God. No, but another friend, dear friend, Carl of, not Uncle Carl, Carl from back home, sent me a delicious link. Delicious is the only word I have in my mind now after those perfumes. Fabulous link. I don't fucking know. Hairy link to this old limited run magazine from the 70s. It was like Ireland UFO News. And I'm going to be reading that, the accounts, like the first-hand witness accounts from that magazine over on Patreon. Hoping to start recording that in the next few days as well. Mm. So just another little bonus thing. It's super cool. And I feel like if I'm reading it for Patreon, it'll give me an excuse to just sit down and just read those magazines. Going to be cool. Come along for the ride, everybody. Okay. Chicago, November 1970. Jackson 5 were top of the charts with I'll Be There, and the Aristocats was playing in the cinemas. All the while, Ed Becker was busy getting his new apartment ready for his wife and their infant daughter. It had been a stressful few months for the couple because back in July, when Ed went to drop off the rent check to their landlord, he excitedly told her that he was about to become a dad and was promptly told that they would need to move ASAP because there were no children allowed in the building. Hmm. Yeah, this was perfectly legal to do back then. It's actually not strictly illegal to do now. I looked into it. Like, there's ways around it and all. Anyway, so Ed just got to scouring the classifieds in search of a new home. They scrimped and saved over the next few months and managed to scrape together enough to buy this rundown home on Campbell Street near the Logan Square area of Chicago. In fairness to them, they did really well getting enough for the mortgage and all the different fees together. But at the same time, the realtor who was selling the place seemed pretty desperate to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. He was like, just make an offer. I promise it's going to be accepted. So the two-story, no, they still offered asking price, but still. The two-story building consisted of two separate apartments, a basement with partitions that weren't livable, but it was a functional basement, with like a wash basin and area for washer and dryer. There was an attic at the very top, which is where attics are, that wasn't much use. It was kind of like, it was hard to get into. There wasn't much room up there. And then there was also a separate garage. Now, Ed figured that they could rent out the ground floor apartment and that would cover more than half of their mortgage, right? So he was pretty excited about that. And to be honest, like, I was excited for him reading this book. What are you laughing at?
I was just laughing at your attic thing.
Sometimes I write things and then as I read them back over, it's just like, what is this? But yeah, the place even came with a tenant and they were going to pay 3 months rent up front. And funnily enough, this rent that was paid up front ended up being like almost the right amount to cover all the fees that Ed needed to pay. That's how tight their budget was. Uh-huh. Like if he hadn't had that tenant, I don't know what they were going to do. Like, it was actually very stressful stuff. Like, they got the house by like the skin of their teeth. This tenant, though, seemed to be part of the reason why the realtor was having such a hard time selling the place to begin with.
Mm.
This building had been built by the family Ed was buying it from. We're going to call them the Sykes family, okay?
Okay.
I did some real, like, digging on this story. Dulce looked over my shoulder one day and I was, like, looking through the house because I had managed to track down the property, the deed to the property with, like, Ed and Marsha's signature on it.
Yeah.
And there's six different copies. And I was like, found each person who sold,
yeah,
who they bought the house from. Anyway, it was all just so I could find the actual address, just to be nosy. And then I did. And it was very cool. And Dulce was like, what are you creeping on over there? I was like, on Google Maps,
like,
and all.
He was like, I am very good at what I do now.
To be fair, I got lucky. I won't be sharing that information. It's very easy to find if you look in the right place. So anyway, we're going to call them the Sykes family. In the book, Ed used a lot of pseudonyms, and I'm just going to go with the names that he used in the book other than Sykes, which I'm just going to add in here. So Papa Sykes built the house way back when, and only members of the Sykes family had ever lived there up until this point, with the exception of one in-law. Someone in the family had died, and the family had decided to sell. In fact, Ed's new tenant was the daughter of Papa Sykes, and her name was Myra.
Okay.
Myra wasn't well. Like, she was clearly suffering with some sort of mental illness, but it seems like the rest of the family, I don't know, didn't want to deal with her or something. We'll get into the family later. There's definitely a history of abuse and just general mental unwellness throughout all of the members of the family, apparently. But Myra was kind of just left to her own devices on the first floor apartment. And when first viewing the property, she verbally abused Ed and the realtor, and Ed described her as, quote, a dirty old woman that looked as if she hadn't bathed or washed her clothes in months.
Wow.
Her hair was a filthy matted grey. The only thing dirtier in sight was the tiny poodle she cradled against her shoulder like a baby.
Whoa.
Like, that's buddy.
Like, yeah, buddy.
Like my nanny's
poor
dog.
Buddy. Oh, God love him.
So while Ed was viewing the apartment, she came out of her apartment screaming obscenities at the two men, and the realtor, very professionally, shouted back at her to get her ass back in the apartment and shut up. Now, obviously, wow, this sounds horrible, but it seemed like apparently this was the only way to get her to go away.
Like, I just like how you wrote it.
I'm pretty, like, that's almost
like
a quote.
Like, he professionally,
yeah,
said to shut up.
But, like, I think you had to meet her energy.
Right.
Oh, or else she was just going to continue, like.
Okay.
Because, yeah, it's awful. But the family or someone, her attorney or something, had arranged for her to stay on an extra 90 days as a tenant until they figured out some other arrangements. Presumably a facility that could take care of her or something like that.
Mm.
So finally, on the 12th of November, Ed got the keys. But the place was in pretty bad shape, and he didn't want Marsha and the baby moving in until he could at least get the upstairs apartment cleaned and ready for them. Marsha was from quite a well-off family, like quite well-to-do, whereas Ed was more working class. He grew up in the city of Chicago, which is a great Christy Moore song. He was a little bit more used to like the rough and ready lifestyle of city living, like maybe having someone hanging around outside your window in the middle of the night and that kind of thing. Whereas Marsha was used to lovely suburban living where everything is quiet and all the lawns are cut and all that kind of stuff. So he really had to make a good effort to get this place scrubbed clean, get the everything painted, and make the absolute best he could out of this inner city dwelling. Just basically, he didn't say it in so many words, but just so Marsha couldn't say, I told you this was a bad idea. You know what I mean? Like, that was the impression I got. And I'm sure, out of love for his wife, he wanted her to be comfortable in their new house. So over the next couple of weeks, Ed got stuck in. He would drive over after work during the week and enlisted his little brother for some weekend work. Now, he was never truly alone in the house because Myra was always downstairs and would occasionally come out and just hurl abuse at him. So he put his feeling of unease down to the fact that she may pop out at any minute.
Mm.
Which, in fairness, like, if you're just trying to, like, you know, you're in the back of the room, you're fixing the light, and there's, so that's the only light that you would have, and you're not sure, but you think an old lady with a dirty poodle on her shoulder might pop out at any minute.
Yeah.
And just go, this isn't for you. This is not your place. This is not your place, you fucking bastard.
Yeah, that's true. You're going to be on edge. I mean, like, what if she, like, rolls up with, like, a weapon or something? Or, like, she does it while he's on a ladder.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, like, that is scary.
The place where I grew up, like, my first few years before my parents got, like, their own house, it was this long, like, pretty busy main road, and, you know, my nanny had lived there all her life, all that kind of crap. But there was a lady a little bit like Myra, and obviously this isn't a nice thing to call her, but she was just known as either Mad Maggie or Mad Sally. The poor woman had had a mental breakdown, like, years earlier, right? And just didn't get the help she needed. This was 1990s Ireland, like, you know what I mean? If you didn't go to the priest, you weren't getting any help. And then I don't think the priest was much help in most cases. So,
yeah,
Mad Maggie is what we called her. Other people on the other end of the road called her Mad Sally. She would, like, dance back and forth, like, up and down the street as if she was waltzing with someone. And,
oh, wow.
Like, literally from top to bottom. My mother was terrified of her. Because, like, you could be in the shops, like, you know, bent over, like, picking up your crisps, and then you'd stand up and her face would be here and she'd just be like, like, scream.
Holy shit.
Bloody murder in your face and all. Yeah. So, like, we would see her coming and my mom would be like, quick, 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 like, cross the road. And at that time, like, I probably wasn't old enough, but I used to run down to the shops for, like, Nanny and Papa or whoever, buying them smokes or whatever with a little note to Mick to say, this is for me Nanny and me Papa. And if I saw her coming, like, I would brick it. So there is something to be said about these older ladies who scream and shout for no reason.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bit of a tangent. Anyway, the following Saturday, Ed picked up his little brother, Butch, brought him to the house, and the two of them got to work on the upstairs apartment. The family had left all this junk behind.
Mm.
It actually looked like they had ransacked the place and just left everything where it lay because it might have been that they were looking for something. Anyway, he gets into the apartment. He's like, well, what the fuck? Happens to befriend some dude who owns, like, a junk truck or something like that.
Okay.
So the guy comes over and he's like, hey, there's a nice cement mixer in the back garden. Would you sell it to me? And Ed's like, I'll tell you what, make you a deal. You clear all this shit out or just, like, take it away for me. You can have whatever you want. I don't want any of this crap. So that's the deal. So they spend the whole morning just carting all this crap up and down, down the stairs and out the door. And then they get ready, like, to paint and wallpaper. Very trendy stuff, apparently, for the 70s, according to Ed. And, like, he had to get in and, like, disinfect the walls and the floors. You know what I mean? Like, nothing about the place was, like, ready to move in. So they were busy. Ed was painting the living room and Butch was painting the bedroom at one stage. But Ed kept looking in and he could see Butch looking over his shoulder and acting weird in general, right? So Butch is, like, painting away very fast, apparently. And not just because my hand was doing this. But Ed was looking in because he was going, like, my God, like, Butch is really fast at painting. Like,
yeah. Getting splattered with fucking.
Yeah. But he kept looking behind him and Ed couldn't see what he was looking at. Oh, what? Just painting while he's looking behind him?
Just imagine. He's like. You know?
Like he's at a fucking rave or something.
Yeah. He's just covered in paint.
So Ed eventually gets off his ladder and goes into the bedroom to see what Butch keeps looking at. He looks around. It's a completely empty room. They've just emptied every centimeter of this place. But he realizes that Butch has been looking directly at the closet. So he walks into the closet. The door, I don't think it even had a door, but the door was open anyway. And he looks around and on the floor is a very well-used looking Ouija board. kind of like a trope at this stage, right?
A Luigi board.
A Luigi board. Ed is a complete and utter skeptic at this point. So he assumes that Butch saw this Ouija board in the closet, in this new strange place, and is getting freaked out, reasonably enough. So I'm sure he just makes fun of his brother, and he's like, don't be getting scared. Like, this is a whole bunch of baloney, Butch. But Butch didn't even know it was in there.
Yeah.
He was just getting this weird feeling.
Yeah.
As if someone was watching him the whole time. Things only got worse for poor old Butch. Not too long after he finished painting in the bedroom, he joined Ed in the living room when suddenly the door flew open and in walks this disheveled, cackling old lady who just stared them down and laughed hysterically before suddenly breaking down in tears right in front of them.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I'm telling you, these old ladies are terrifying. Yes, it's Myra. Oh, okay. Ed simply guided her back to her apartment and then walked back up. And Butch is just standing there like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what did you just buy? Like, what is this house?
Where were you hiding her?
Yeah. So he explained the situation to Butch.
I can't believe you waited until now.
I know.
To fucking explain. Like, she has free range of this fucking house.
Can you imagine? She's like, ha, 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 ha. Like, this is horrible.
Terrifying.
But I think Butch actually thought she was a ghost. Do you know what I mean? Like, he got such a fright. So Ed took him for hot dog lunch after this to calm him down. This is Chicago in the 70s, all right? Oh, you know what else I found doing my research into this? I found the deed for John Wayne Gacy's mom's house.
Whoa.
I think he bought it with her at one point. Might be wrong, but it was definitely her signature and his signature
on the
thing. And it was...
I thought... The way you said that sentence was like, I bought the house and it included my mom. You know what I mean?
Me?
I bought the house with her.
Me and my mom bought John Wayne Gacy's.
No.
It came with the house. Like, yeah, she was free like with the house.
Yeah, like she's Myra. Included. Right.
Like Myra.
Yeah, I think that's why I thought like that, because Myra came with the house.
Right. Imagine that. It's like opening the cereal box. It's like, oh, yay, you have this mentally ill woman that's going to live with you for 90 days. God. And surprise you before hot dog lunch.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Mangy poodle included.
Mangy poodle. After lunch, they decided to explore the basement, Butch and Ed. I think the hot dogs, maybe it was the nitrates, settled Butch's heart rate after the Myra incident.
Mm.
So they were feeling pretty calm, but I think Butch was still on edge because now he knew that there was this old lady just walking room to room, like, you know what I mean?
You know, this is all really good information, because next time I'm terrified, I'm going to ask for hot dog lunch. I'm going to be like,
somebody give me a hot dog.
Adam, go into the fridge. Give me a hot dog.
Make sure you boil it. I don't want none of that microwave crap. I'll keep it with our ghost kit for the next time we go ghost hunting.
Instead of throwing like the cat balls, you're going to throw hot dogs.
Yeah. Open your mouth. Anyway, after lunch, they decided to explore the basement. Ed still hadn't thoroughly explored his new property because he was only going there in the evenings. I think he had like changed the locks, but every time he was getting there, it was dark.
Yeah.
And like, he was just basically getting the bare essential done, thinking, I'll tackle all this big stuff on the weekend.
Mm.
So he was really excited by the fact that the basement had like three rooms. He called them sheds. Because it wasn't like proper partitioned walls. It was just like slats of wood, probably, I don't know, old pallets or something like that. But one of them was padlocked shut. So he was like, come on, Butch, like, there could be treasure or anything in there. And it's all mine anyway. Like, ha, ha, ha.
It's like a slew of more old ladies.
Yeah, just a whole room full of Myras. So there could have been anything in there. It literally could have been a whole room of porn or any sort of treasure, like porn. And finally, they managed to break the lock off. And what lay inside this 6x8 room blew their socks off. It was an entire room of porn.
Shut up. It really was.
Yeah, literally. You watched the TV show. I don't remember this.
I didn't watch it.
Oh, you were here while it was on.
Well, I was probably reading.
Well, it was literally someone's old classic magazine collection, right? cool.
Oh, printed porn.
This is the 70s.
Oh, there was there wasn't tapes?
Oh, don't think so, actually, at this point.
Betamax?
So at first, I actually thought, like, how cool is this? Like, vintage porn is a huge thing to collect nowadays. Like, there's a lot of people, like, specifically going out and, like, I don't know, say, oh, Playboy from, like, 1962 till June 1964. Mm. They're the ones I want. And then the price goes up. Like, you know, this kind of thing. Marcus Parks from last podcast on the left, I think he has a collection of old pornos.
Huh.
Yeah. And especially, like, the Playboys are worth, like, some money. Anyway, so I was like, this is really cool. I can get down with all that, like, vintage porn. This is dope. But then they started looking through these old shoe boxes that were, like, kind of dotted all around. He was like, oh, this is funny. Look at all these magazines. I'm sure Butch thought he was in fucking heaven. You think he was 14? Like,
poor Butch.
What is this? But yeah, so then they got these shoe boxes, and when they opened them up, they were all full to the brim with cutouts of women from, like, magazines and newspapers, even cartoons, not porn mags, like, not even, like, nudie pics or anything like that. Just, like, if a woman was in, like, a tight top, maybe, it would be, like, meticulously cut out, placed in the box. If it was a cartoon and it was wearing, like, a short skirt or something like that, cut out, put in a box.
Mm.
Serial killer vibes, right? Like, that's just weird.
Like, with an X-Acto knife, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
And, like, just so many of these boxes.
Mm.
Chock full of weird newspaper clippings. So the name Ben was all written all over these boxes and all over the magazines and stuff as well, right? This was Ben's room, without a doubt. So anyway, with that, the two boys got back to work full of porn and hot dogs.
Wow.
And over the next couple of weekends, they managed to get the apartment ready for moving day, December 1st. This was a weekday, so Butch wasn't available. And Ed reached out to his old buddy George for help unloading their old apartment, bringing everything into the new one. The only thing was, George had lost his sight in Vietnam. George was fucking blind. Like, not like he could see a little bit. George was completely blind. And Ed was like, you'll help me carry all this shit up the stairs. Viet fucking Nam, man. No, so George and Ed had been friends for years and years, and Ed felt that his family were treating him like a paraplegic ever since he was gone blind. They wouldn't let him, like, live his life, basically, because I think they were worried of what could happen.
Yeah.
And to the point where, like, I think they were dressing him and everything. And Ed thought this was demeaning.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, George, come on, let's move all this shit. You're blind. You still have arms and legs. Let's go. And according to Ed, it was a turning point in George's life, because it gave him, like, his life back. And his family were like, oh shit, look at him carrying all this stuff. It's fine.
Look at him using his arms. That still fucking work.
Yes. I think the family were just trying to, like, wrap him up in cotton wool. But his lack of sight made for a very interesting detail, which Ed wouldn't realize until years later. And Ed did admit that he would occasionally forget that George was blind, and there was a few instances of him tripping over stuff or walking into the odd door frame here and there. But the whole time unloading the old apartment, George was fine. When they got to the new apartment, though, on multiple occasions, George would just ask out randomly, who's there? When it was just himself and Ed.
Yeah.
Ed just brushed this off as maybe him hearing, like, Myra downstairs, right? So he was like, no one, like, it's just the two of us, like, relax, you're fine, you're fine. So with that, George went on home. Ed and Marcia spent their first night in the apartment, exhausted after a full day of moving, and Ed was up at 5 the next morning for work. Can relate. There was no shower in the apartment, so Ed went to run a bath. Ed was actually a computer programmer in the 70s.
Huh.
Who knew you could just make up a job and go in every day, you know what I mean? I don't know what exactly that entailed, but it was, he literally had the same schedule as I have now.
Oh.
So yeah, 5 in the morning to like 6 at night or something like that. Anyway, Ed went to run a bath. He set the water running, put in the plug, and then went out to the kitchen where Marcia had a cup of coffee waiting. After his coffee, he went back into the bathroom, only to find an empty tub and all the hot water running down the drain.
How fucking annoying.
Yeah. 5 o'clock in the morning. I would literally just go to work stinking. Have a bath the night before. The plug hadn't just come loose, though. The chain was wrapped around the faucet.
Oh.
Yeah. So this would happen day in, day out, until eventually Ed installed a different type of stopper. But that first day he went to work, he tried calling home to check in on Marcia. How are you getting on? The new house? Is the baby all right? And the phone line was busy. So he called again at his next break and his next break. Phone line was busy all day.
Mm.
Phones were expensive back in these days. So when Ed got home that night, he like went off on Marcia for being on the phone all day. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, are you talking on the phone to your mom? Like, we can't afford this. Like, but she assured him that she wasn't. And she had only realized the phone was physically off the hook sometime later in the afternoon.
Do they charge you for that if the phone is off the hook?
No, but back in the day, it would have gone to the operator.
Mm.
And then like the operator would have sat there being like, who do you want? Hello. And then after a while, they would hang up. So that was that. But it just meant that nobody could get through to you.
Oh, okay.
But like the drain plug, this would happen again and again. And it was an immediate source of contention in their up until now otherwise happy relationship.
Mm.
Ed said he felt a change in Marcia very soon after moving in. But at the time, like I said, he was working 6 days a week and all of his spare time was spent working on the new house. He put it down to the fact that she was at home all day with their first child, which is totally fair.
Yeah.
Like that, like she was literally at home all day, minding the kid. And then he would come home, have dinner, and then be busy from like 7 till 11 or something like that. Then get back into bed and wake up at fucking 5 again the next morning for probably a cold bath. There was a lot of changes going on, but I will say here that Marcia was having a lot of her own experiences during the long hours spent in the house on her own. She didn't want to trouble Ed because of how much like work he was putting in, and also because he didn't believe in ghosts or anything like that. I don't even think that they ever had that conversation. She just knew there's no point in me bringing this up.
Right.
He's not going to believe me. So much so that like ghosts or haunting or paranormal wasn't even in their lexicon. Why did I use that word?
Mm-hmm.
Lexicon? Their vocabulary. They didn't use these words. It's not our house. You know what I mean? So she had so many personal experiences that she didn't share until years later, that Ed actually wrote a second book based purely on what she had gone through and I think maybe updates on another person who lived there. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to get a copy of that book. The book that he wrote is called True Haunting, and then the second one is True Haunting 2. True Haunting is on Kindle. It's available everywhere, and for whatever reason, True Haunting 2 isn't. So I did try and get that, but basically the only thing that I can base Marcia's experiences on is the small bit of the episode of Paranormal Witness that she was in.
Mm.
Ed did say on a separate interview that he was nice about it, but basically Paranormal Witness embellished a lot of his story, which obviously isn't something that anybody wants to happen to their story. But Marcia claims that within the first few weeks, there were dishes being thrown off of shelves and everything. Other less extreme but equally strange stuff was also happening, like the mixer being lifted off the hook. Like it was on a hook on the wall in the kitchen, and I think it began that like Marcia would just find it in the middle of the kitchen floor and be like, okay, that's weird. Other stuff like lights flickering, the phone constantly being taken off the hook. It became a thing that they would just like, as they were walking past the phone, they would just like flip it back on, keep going to the bathroom or whatever they were doing.
They've adjusted.
Yeah, the mixer was the same. Ed changed the light in the kitchen and all because it was flickering on and off all day. The new light was still flickering. Weird stuff like that. You can't really mess up like a light fixture, like if it's done properly. On December 20th, they were to have baby Christine baptized at a local church. And George and his wife were going to be godparents, blind George.
Mm.
The plan was to have the ceremony after 12 o'clock mass, and then Ed, Marcia, George, Mrs. George, and about 12 others were all going to go back with the priest to the apartment for a buffet lunch. And the priest was going to bless the apartment for them. Chicago in the 1970s, what can I say?
Everybody was having hot dogs and doing the Charleston.
But as well as lunch, the priest was going to bless the apartment for them. Everything went as planned until they were walking back to the apartment, and Myra, who had been pretty quiet since they had actually moved in, greeted Ed, the priest, and George at the front door by screaming obscenities at the priest. Everybody else had gone on ahead and were already upstairs, so nobody else heard this. But shocked by her sudden reemergence, Ed just started shouting back at her, just like the real estate agent had, and eventually she retreated, still shouting and calling them all fuckers who didn't belong there. So the priest is just witnessing all this, like this fine young man whose child I've just baptized, and now he's calling this old lady a fucker and a bitch, and he's going to evict her if she doesn't go back inside and be quiet.
Yeah.
So Ed apologized profusely to the priest, who told him not to worry, but it was a jarring situation for everybody nonetheless. Poor George was like, what the fuck is happening? Like,
yeah. Was it because he was blind?
Yeah. Anyway, they continued upstairs, and the priest was going to do his blessing before they all sat down to buffet lunch. So he got straight to business, whipping out his bits. A small leather-bound book and a brass holy water dispenser. These dispensers are actually called aspergillums. Did you know that?
No.
Nobody did. Or that might just be the ones that they specifically use in church to like sprinkle. Remember at the funeral, they were like throwing fucking water and shit at us.
Yeah.
They're called aspergillums. But I went down this strange little rabbit hole, and it turns out that there's two very different websites that sell the exact same stuff. They've just rebranded. Aspergillums turn out to be cocaine vials.
Oh. They've been repurposed.
Yeah, so there's like holyjoe.com selling aspergillums for the aspiring priest or whatever who's doing house calls. And then there's like letsgetwrecked.com who's selling the same stuff just without the cross. And it's for your
drug use. If it's for your cocaine and you go like this, you're just wasting the cocaine.
No. That's what I'm saying. The small like pocket size ones are just filled with holy water.
Oh.
So you would keep it in your pocket.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Oh.
Yeah, or around your neck. So, priests, drug dealers, maybe we all need to make a connection here and we can figure out some better pricing for these aspergillums. Typically, these house blessings go down fairly straightforward from what I understand. The priest will read his prayers and sprinkle holy water while going from room to room. Now, if you're religious, it's a lovely ritual and a lot of people do it when they move into a new place or if they're building a new place. Funnily enough, if you're building the new place, they say to do it before you put the windows in.
Hmm.
And the priest is supposed to like rid all of the energies and then you close the house in and it'll be like empty.
Interesting.
Yeah. As the priest lifted his holy water dispenser into the air to begin his blessing, the dispenser, or aspergillum, literally shattered in his hand and littered the floor with holy water and brass shards.
Whoa.
This was metal. Like, this was brass. It wasn't glass or anything.
Yeah.
The priest quickly bent down to pick up the pieces and promptly told everyone, I must leave now. He was terrified and confused.
That buffet lunch wasn't sitting very nice.
Yeah. They hadn't even had their buffet lunch yet.
Oh, they had?
No, travesty. The buffet lunch was going cold. The hot dogs.
Oh, shit.
Ed convinced them to at least just, like, the priest was freaking out.
Yeah.
And Ed was like, hey, like, you can't leave. Like, you have to bless my house. It's my house. Like, you told me you were going to bless it. Like, at least bless the baby's room. So eventually he did. He ran in, literally mumbled some words in Latin. He wasn't even reading from his little prayer book. And then just dipped, right? He got stuck in the closet.
Because what?
The door to the apartment, or the door to the hallway to leave the apartment was right next to the closet, and it was two of the same door.
Oh, he ran into the fucking closet. Fucking
freeze ran into the closet. Jesus. Trying to get out of here. Ed's family are just like sitting there going like, what is going on?
Got stuck in the bathroom at your parents' house.
Yeah, we need to change those locks, actually.
Oh, okay.
They will. They're going to change the kitchen.
That happened. Well. I panicked.
Yeah, she did. It's okay. Happens to us all. Anyway.
I was hungry.
You needed a buffet lunch.
I needed a buffet lunch.
Ed's whole family is like sitting there looking at him going, at the priest going like, what is happening? So he ran into the closet, realized he was into the closet, ran back out, went to leave. And Ed was like, it all happened so fast. As he was like rushing out, Ed was like, wait, I have a donation for you. Like, you know what I mean? And he literally turned around like he was grabbing a baton in a race.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Grabbed the money, because of course he didn't leave without his money, and was gone.
Yeah. It'd be funny if he would have handed him a hot dog. And he would have ran off.
A hot dog wrapped in a 20.
Let's go.
Yeah. Poor El George was left sitting in the kitchen going like, can someone please tell me what is happening here?
Someone hand me a hot dog. Like, yeah. I can't see where they are.
I need to calm down.
Jeez.
They all just put it down. George and Ed actually used to be musicians. And they were like, you know what? I bet him seeing Myra, having that whole interaction with Myra, probably just like threw him off his game, and he kind of got stage fright. There's a lot of people here in the house. It's a small house. That kind of thing. They did have a good laugh at him.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah. The whole family were like, what is this priest
doing?
What a weenie. Like, yeah, yeah. More weenie talk.
Yeah. That's what we'll name this episode.
Weenie talk.
Yeah.
Shortly after Christmas, Ed had decided to get a dog in the hopes that Marcia would feel a little bit more at ease in the house, considering the long hours that she spent alone there. They named the dog Holly, Christmas dog.
Oh, cute.
Like my cousin Holly.
Yeah.
Christmas cousin.
Christmas cousin.
She is. I think she's the 27th of December, yeah. Or the 18th or something like that.
That's cute.
Anyway, the dog Holly was a shepherd husky mix and had a wolfish look about her. Like
cute.
Big, yeah, very cute, very intelligent. And Ed felt comfortable having her there with Marcia. She was like a good protective guard dog.
Yeah.
Soon the activity around the house started to escalate, and one evening Ed heard footsteps on their upstairs porch. Now, it's kind of hard to describe this. Well, it's not really. It's an upstairs porch. It's a porch on the upstairs.
We got it.
But at some point, somebody actually closed it in. Mm. So it's not really a room. I don't think it's insulated, but it's like an enclosed exterior room that has like stairs leading up to it from downstairs. But you can only get to it if you're in the building. So that's why it's hard to explain.
So it's like an enclosed patio.
Yeah, but upstairs.
Yeah.
And you have access from the balcony. First and second floor. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's not a balcony.
See, it wasn't that hard.
Well, anyway, someone was walking around on this upstairs enclosed balcony porch. And so Ed just assumed that it was Myra sneaking up and being weird for one reason or another.
I'm starting to like Myra. Justice for Myra, man.
It's actually just Janice from Friends.
Yep. I love Janice.
So anyway, Ed just assumed that Myra had snuck up for one reason or another. So he took Holly out with him to investigate. Of course, they found no one there. Mm. And also no sign that Myra had left her apartment. Like, the time it would have taken her to run back downstairs, close the door, all that shit, Ed would have seen and heard her. Mm. And I'm sure Holly would have been going nuts. These footsteps became a regular occurrence after this. Again, similar to like a lot of stories that we've covered. You know what I mean? The activity increases in one way or another, and then it like stalls at that point.
Mm.
And everything stays the same. Like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. this stuff happens for a long time, and then maybe something else happens and it'll stay like that for a long time. These steps became a regular occurrence. And Holly began sleeping next to Ed and Marcia's bed every night. These footsteps were driving her mad, though.
Mm.
And she'd start barking late at night with the young baby in the apartment. They also had a cat called Kitty. Very original. Who would act a little strange from time to time.
As any cat would.
I mean, yeah. But she would, like, all of a sudden come running out of the living room where her favorite chair was, looking back over her shoulder and hissing at something that wasn't there.
Mm.
Eventually, Kitty, like Ed and Marcia, began to just avoid the living room, other than occasionally looking in and hissing.
Like all of them.
Eden Marshall didn't do this.
They all did that.
But I actually kind of left out that, like, people just naturally gravitated toward the kitchen in this place, which isn't unusual. Like, that's where we sit at home if we're all chatting. Like, you know what I mean? We all just sit around the kitchen table drinking tea. But this was like, Marsha was basically locked in the kitchen. She just got, people just got weird vibes being in the living room.
Yeah.
And I think Ed didn't even think about it, like, because he spent such a little amount of time at home anyway.
Yeah.
That he probably just ate his meal and went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
But unconsciously, he was avoiding the living room. Like, who doesn't want to sit down on their couch and watch TV? Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Other things began happening around this time as well. They would hear a couple arguing, like, really close. So close that it sounded like they could have been standing right on the back porch. They just assumed that it was the next door neighbors. Ed had actually been hearing these people arguing in the evenings when he was down in the basement clearing out all the crap that was down there. And he sold the porn mags to an antique dealer or something.
Oh,
like
did he? Did he get a lot of money out of that?
Yes, $60 or something, yeah.
Oh.
Decent amount.
Yeah.
How many hot dogs could you have bought back then? They didn't realize until much later, like much later, that they were actually hearing the same argument pretty much every time. If they let it play out, it seemed to last about the same amount of time as the previous night, But if Ed went to check to see where it was coming from, because it sounded like it was on the back porch, it would stop as soon as he got there. Or as soon as he got up to go to the back porch, it would just stop dead. The kitchen door started opening on its own, even though years of paint had actually made it stiff. But time and time again, Ed and Marsha would just walk in and close it, much like they would routinely check the phone and put it back on the hook or replace the mixer when they found it lying on the floor. Just another one of those things that became part of their routine. Ed was starting to maybe, possibly believe that there might have been something a bit strange going on at this point. Marsha had been convinced since the very first week that the place was haunted, but again, she hadn't wanted to broach the subject with Ed. Myra's 90 days were finally up and someone, presumably her family members, came to pick her up. Now, it sounded like a pretty horrific scene and I do feel bad for her, like, obviously. Like, this house was all Myra knew. She grew up there. She never left there. And as far as she was concerned, I think she thought she was going to die there, you know. But they literally took her kicking and screaming with their horrible little dog draped over her shoulder.
That's rough.
Yeah, it was a Saturday afternoon when she left and Ed decided to wait until the Sunday to start cleaning up and getting the place ready for paint for the new tenants, right? He was like, I'm not even going to fucking deal with that today, because he knew that it was going to be an absolute shit show. Their new tenants were in the exact same boat as Marsha and Ed had been, a young couple with a kid who had been told to vacate their current apartment because they didn't allow kids there. So everyone was happy with the arrangement. Ed and Marsha felt like, well, we can't say no to these people who are in the exact same position we were. But he did tell Marsha not to become too friendly with them because he needed to maintain the landlord-tenant relationship. This was his first actual tenant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I go on to say it down below, but like, I think it's worth saying, like, Ed was only 24 and Marsha was only 22. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So, like, they're very young to be in this position in the first place. I know it was a different era.
Right.
But still. So that Sunday when Ed went into Myra's place, he immediately got chills and a sense that just something wasn't quite right, particularly in one of the bedrooms. Now, he brushes all of these feelings off with rational thoughts like, it's just cold, it's a neglected apartment, it doesn't get as much sun as the upstairs, this kind of, you know, usual crap. But then his eyes started to play tricks on him. When he was in the dining room, scrubbing the floor with disinfectant soap, he saw what he assumed was Marsha peeking in the door to check in on him. But in the second or two it took him to stand up and greet her, there was no one there.
Mm.
He must have been tired, he thought to himself. A little while later, he was in the kitchen washing the walls down when someone walked by the doorway in the apartment, like an interior doorway. Now, it was only a glimpse out of the corner of his eye, but it was enough for him to realize that it couldn't have been Marcia, who was only 5 foot tall on a good day. This time, he actually went around checking all of the empty rooms, but that's all they were. Empty rooms. Nobody there. With Myra being gone, there seemed to be another uptick in activity. Maybe the house was pining for her or something, like, who knows, you know what I mean? Now, I'm wondering whether all of this was going on previously, but they just assumed that everything was to be blamed on Myra.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been hearing all these different noises or whatever, but were just like, it's just Myra, up to her old tricks. Ed would come home from work to find Marcia, the baby, the cat, and the dog all holed up in the kitchen, and Marcia was complaining that the animals had been on high alert all day, hissing and barking at some unseen something by the front door. It was an instant argument from the time Ed got home, because he had just gotten home. Marcia's unloading on him because he's the first human that she's seen all day. The animals are driving her nuts. So Ed would just eat and then busy himself working downstairs, getting the place ready for their new tenants, Dan and Diane. It was more than just the downstairs apartment that needed work. The new folks had a laundry area in the basement, which could be accessed from both outside the whole house and from the first floor apartment. They had their own door. Ed had initially brought Marcia down there the first time she came over, and he was like, look, I'm going to get you a lovely new washer and dryer, and this can be your area so you won't have to look at it or whatever. Instantly, she was like, I don't want to come back down to this basement. It was just a feeling she got, and she never stepped foot back in that basement again. So he had like run gas and water to the upstairs porch to have her own washer and dryer. But obviously, he couldn't have the new tenants coming up there, so they were going to have to deal with the basement. One evening, Ed was painting the floor in the basement when he heard the distinctive sound of furniture being dragged slowly across the floor above him. He even described the rhythmic bouncing of table legs as though it was just one person doing all of the movement. Like, you know, when you grab a table and it's like, bop, 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 you know who it is. He decided it must have been Marcia on the second floor, and the first floor being empty was just magnifying the sound. He asked Marcia when he got back into bed if she had been, I don't know, like mopping or whatever and had to move the table and chairs to get in there. But she assured him that that wasn't the case. Now, they must have been talking about the activity at this point, because when Ed finally installed a drain lever instead of the plug that he had been using in the bathtub, and it worked, he started cheering, saying, Ed won, ghost zero. So I think this might have been his first time maybe addressing the fact that they had ghosts.
Yeah.
I don't know whether there was kind of jokes before between him and Marcia or whether it had just hadn't been brought up. But he had also been addressing one potential spirit since the very beginning. I don't know that he knew that he was even doing it.
Okay.
But remember the porn shed?
Yeah.
Of course, everybody remembers the porn shed.
Right.
All that stuff had the name Ben scribbled all over it.
Uh-huh.
And he knew for a fact that Ben had died in the building.
Okay.
Ben was Myra's brother, and he had died in Ed's bathroom. Where he was having trouble
with the
drain plug. So Ed knew this going in. Like, the property was advertised as an heir property, meaning, like, this is a family trying to just get rid of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it also is allowing you to know that somebody has passed away there.
Okay.
So whenever something strange happened, or he was trying to clean up the mess in the basement, or if, like, I don't know, like, he went to fix something and it was being awkward, he would often just say, like, Ben, you dirty old deviant, how did you let this place get so messy? Or, like, Ben, you old pervert, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think it was just blowing off steam, and it was probably kind of funny to him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I thought that it was interesting, like, maybe he was subconsciously acknowledging the presence, and maybe even unknowingly, like, giving it life.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, if we're going to go down that road, you know what I mean?
Makes sense.
But Ben wasn't the only person to have passed away in that house.
Okay.
Not by a long shot. His father, Papa Sykes, he had built the house, like I said, and although I don't know if he actually died in that house, he certainly died while living in the house, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
He was supposed to be a horribly abusive man, and it sounds like he passed this on to at least one of his sons. Ben. Ben's wife also lived in that house. Up until Ed and Marcia moved in, she was the only non-family member to have ever lived in the house. She was the in-law that I mentioned earlier. But Ben and his wife's relationship was tumultuous at best. And the poor woman actually took her own life in the basement. Ben was the one who found her down there. Then there was one of Ben's brothers, Henry. Henry had died in his 20s in the front bedroom of the downstairs apartment. He also had issues with his mental health and died suddenly. This is pure speculation, but there were rumors of possible suicide, and Ed personally felt... The person who told Ed this kind of leaned into maybe it was made to look like a suicide.
I see.
And that Henry was, quote, some kind of deviant. So I don't, like, if Ben was very abusive, maybe Henry was abusive in other ways. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. But the neighbor just said it was kind of fucking weird. So that's Ben. That's Papa Sykes, Ben, and Henry have all died in the house. Apparently.
And Ben's wife.
And Ben's wife, yeah, shit. So apparently the only child that escaped the abusive household was Bob. Bob and his mother had had a falling out of some sort, and he left and just never spoke to her again. But he only lived down the road and would actually walk past the house every day for lunch and, like, on his way to and from work.
Yeah.
But he gets a bit sad at this point because his mother would sit by the window just waiting to see him. Just to get a look, and, like, apparently she would even call his name out the window. But ever since that argument, he just did not acknowledge her.
Wow.
Ever again. Now, I'm not saying, like, maybe the old lady was an asshole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe she deserved that. But I can't say either way. And it is kind of sad.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
Either way is sad, yeah.
Yeah. Again, all of this information came from Ed's neighbor. But this man reckoned that the mother actually died of a broken heart because of this falling out.
Right.
But she died 20 years later. So right. It's like a leaky heart, maybe. I don't know. It all sounds a little bit romantic when you say it like that. You know what I mean? But she was still looking out the window up until the day she died. And maybe even after.
Oh my God.
Boom, boom, boom. So that's at least four people who have died in the house. And Papa Sykes, who possibly died in the house, making it five. And then Papa Sykes was supposed to have had quite a lot of money, or at least the family thought he had a lot of money. He had land in, like, Idaho or something like that. And the family believed that the money was buried in, like, coffee cans, either hidden in the house or buried on the land. So when Ben died, all the remaining family members, who I don't honestly know who they were, came in and, like, wrecked the place. And that's why it was in such a bad state.
Yeah.
Or we are assuming that it is. But then, like, Ed also had, like, some random girl call to his house one night being like, oh, I think we left our baby's carriage or crib up in the attic. Can we please go and check? And he was like, no, you fucking weirdo, leave me alone. But then when he went up and checked, like, the attic was bare.
Yeah.
So he then thought back and was like, oh, maybe they were just trying one last time to, like, get this supposed money. But all in all, the house had a very troubled past. And the only thing I'm not too sure about is that the house was sold because Ben passed away. Okay. And then there was four siblings, but only Myra and Bob were alive.
Yeah.
But five heirs showed up to the closing, each with their own attorneys, plus one attorney, presumably on behalf of Myra. Actually, not presumably, because I've seen her name on the deed where her attorney signed on her behalf. And I know for a fact that one of these heirs was Bob, because Bob was his actual name. Ed just didn't mention their surname in the book. So Bob and Myra were there, but I don't know who the other people are. And just funnily enough, when I went back to look at the deeds again, for not like, because I'm being nosy, the whole website was shut down for maintenance for like 3 or 4 days.
Oh, weird.
And at the same time, Ed's website was gone. And it hadn't been the other day.
Weird.
Yeah, it's almost like something was pushing back. It was like, stop being so nosy. So I don't know who all these other people were. I don't know that the family had like, maybe it was like the dad's brother's kids or some weird crap like that. Yeah. Anyway, you don't need to know this information. It doesn't do anything to the story, but I tried to find out, right? So back to Ed and Marcia. Their new tenants moved in on March 1st, and obviously neither Ed nor Marcia had mentioned anything about the strange goings on, but it was only a week before Dan sheepishly approached Ed. It said sheepishly in the book, Ed said later in an interview quite aggressively, so I don't know, but either way, Dan approached Ed and just asked him that the next time he was going to shut off the power to their apartment, if he could give him a little bit of notice. Dan had been relaxing, chilling, to the max. Wait, what's the saying?
Maxing and relaxing.
Maxing and relaxing.
I was just letting you
chilling to the limit.
I was just letting you dig your own hole. Dig yourself in your own hole.
Dan had been maxilaxing, listening to his favorite record, when all of a sudden the place went dark. He went to check to see if it was like a blackout or if the whole neighbor was out, but Ed and Marcia's place still had their lights on. Mm. And then the power came back on a few minutes later, but still, this was quite rude. If it had been Ed, Dan was actually quite concerned about his record. Apparently, if the power went out, like, their record could have scratched it.
I don't know.
Me neither. I don't even know if it's true, to be honest. But the apartments had their own fuse board, and Ed assured Dan that he hadn't turned the power off, and if it happened again, like, he was like, come up and tell me next time and I'll call an electrician and we'll get it fixed. Like, but it wasn't me. And then over the next few weeks, they would continue to hear the usual sounds, but now they could again at least blame the neighbors.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's just Dan and Diane. They're always arguing down there. Dan and Diane. It's almost like there used to be arguments here when they weren't here, but now it's just them arguing of an evening, you know?
Yeah.
They do. Yeah. And then similarly, Dan and Diane in their lovely new place thought, God, the landlords really argue an awful lot, don't they? He's always shouting at that poor woman, Marcia. Dan approached Ed and Marcia as they arrived home late one Saturday evening in a panic, asking how long they'd been gone for. But they'd been out visiting their friends since early that afternoon. It was actually because Ed got pissed off being in the house with all the shit going on. He was just like, come on, let's go somewhere. And this was back in the day when you could visit. You know what I mean? Just arrive up at 2 o'clock in the Saturday afternoon and you're there for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Don't even call ahead. Like.
Well, you wouldn't because it costs money to call people.
Yeah, exactly. So you just rock up. Like, I remember the panic when somebody was calling to the door. It's like, oh God, here they are. Someone run down to their shops, get a tomato.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Get a Mr. Kipling.
So Dan approached Ed and Marcia, asked him where they'd been all day, if they had been upstairs, because Dan and Diane thought that there was like absolute murder going on up there between the two of them, like throwing furniture and everything.
And hot dogs.
And hot dogs. Ed blamed Holly the Husky and Kitty the Cat and told Dan not to worry. Chill. No, but Dan was like genuinely concerned. He thought if it wasn't the two of them, like almost killing one another, someone was after breaking in. So when Ed and Marcia got up to the top of the stairs, they were kind of like, what are we going to find behind this door now?
Yeah.
But all they found was Kitty and Holly cowering in a corner, terrified. I don't know how long they'd been there, but otherwise the place was spotless. Nothing had been moved or anything that they mentioned. A few weeks after this, Ed and Marcia were laying in bed with the lights off, just about to drift off, when suddenly Holly jumped up and went straight into attack mode, growling and snarling at something that wasn't even there. Ed hopped up, turned on the lights and searched the apartment, knowing that he wasn't going to find anything, before returning to bed and finally admitting to Marcia that he believed the place was haunted.
Well, it's about damn time.
And with that startling revelation, we're going to end this part. It's after taking us like 2.5 hours to do this. We're so out of practice.
Yeah.
But yeah, tune in probably 2 weeks' time again for,
Part two.
I think this might be a three-parter. Shit's about to get real. Now that they've acknowledged the presence.
Real long.
Real long. And skinny.
Like a hot dog.
Don't forget to check the description here for the links for Nadia's shop and Savannah's magic store, Vanna Magic, on Instagram with a K. And what all else is there?
That's my
Texan coming out. What all else? Yeah, thanks a million for putting up with us through our little break there. Hoping to go full steam ahead on this. And don't forget to like, rate, and review wherever you're listening. If you're listening and you're going to go on like, that was a dumb comment or this was funny, comment if you're watching on the YouTube thing.
Yeah.
Always love the interaction. And I will have a few pictures to post on our Instagram. So if you want to go ahead and follow us there at Weekly Creep. If you have your personal ghost story, send them to weeklycreep@gmail.com. We will have a listener's episode out very soon. Thank you all very much and bye-bye.
Bye.
Did you see the meme I sent you earlier?
Yo.
Luigi Anna?
Yeah.
Now, Ed.
I forgot about that.
But they's been out visiting. Fucking autocorrect. I've got a bone to pick with Apple. The autocorrect on the iPad is fucking brutal.